Okay, I now have 7 o'clock, so I will now call this public hearing for the Clyde City Council to order this day, June 2nd.
Or 6:30.
What did you say?
6:30.
6:30. You know, I have a trained brain because our normal meetings are 7 o'clock, so a creature of habit. So forgive me on that. June 2nd, 2026 at 6:30 p.m. Roll call, please.
Cody Browning.
Here.
Doug McCauley.
Here.
Greg McMaster.
Here.
Carrie Meek.
Here.
Chris Shea.
Here. All right, so we are here this evening to for a public hearing for an appeal filed by Buckeye Recovery Home, CN Ventures, LLC, located at 235 West Buckeye Street. And in a moment, I will turn this over to our zoning and enforcement director. But prior to that, I notice there are quite a few people here. Some of you may want to have something additional to say about this topic. If it's something new, we would love to hear it. If it's reiterating what was said at the previous hearing on, when was it, April 27th, maybe we could pass on that because we are on a time frame because we have yet another meeting to go to. But if you are going to speak, I would ask that you do this, that you keep it civil, that you would come up to the podium, state your name, where you live, okay, and then state your concerns. Okay, but again, I ask that it remain professional, respectful, and civil. Thank you. So I will turn this over to Jared Young at this moment.
Good evening, Council. I'll first give you a 30,000-foot view of the case and the BZA meeting that we had back in April. CN Ventures LLC purchased the 235 West Buckeye Street parcel on November the 26th, 2025. From the information we obtained, the first occupant arrived in mid-December 2025, and a residential operation of the property as a recovery house commenced without a conditional use permit. Beginning in January 2026, the City of Clyde Zoning Office sent two written notices to CN Ventures LLC advising that the parcel is zoned R1A, and that no business may operate at that property without a conditional use permit or rezoning. In February 2026, the property owner confirmed by email that the parcel had been leased to Joshua Dressel and directed the city to him for any further communications. Buckeye Recovery House, as we learned, was an authorized lessee of CN Ventures LLC. They applied for a conditional use permit on March the 23rd, 2026. This is 3 days after the city issued a formal notice of zoning violation on March 20th, 2026, ordering the property owner lessee to either cease and desist all recovery housing operations or submit and complete a conditional use permit application within 10 to 14 days. The application sought approval under Clyde Codified Ordinances, Section 1145.04B2D and 1169.04B1 to operate a residential social service facility. After public hearing on April 27, 2026, the Board of Zoning Appeals voted to deny the application. The applicant filed an appeal to come before the Clyde City Council, which was scheduled and to be heard today. On May the 12th, 2026, the applicant submitted a written wind-down plan that the city requested. The city accepted the plan, and on May 13th, 2026, they were subject to enforceable conditions, including weekly census reporting and a June 15th final vacancy date. As the overview states, I did receive the census data from Mr. Dressel, and within your packets on the last three pages, there's the Buckeye Recovery House appeal statement that was turned in from Mr. Joshua Dressel, as well as the conditional use application supporting narrative. I thought it was important for the council to see that detail, as he spent time reviewing all of the questions that are called out in the codified ordinances. Are there any comments or questions for me?
Anyone, counsel? Thank you. Who is the representative for Buckeye Recovery? And you are?
Joshua Dressel.
If you have anything you'd like to add.
My name is Joshua Dressel. Yeah, I'm the owner of Buckeye. And actually, I'm not the owner now. We are officially a nonprofit with the state of Ohio, so it's owned by a board. The only thing I have to say for the record is that we did go through the zoning meeting, and first, and thank you guys today for taking the time for us to come and speak to you guys. During that zoning meeting, at the end of it, they couldn't give me a reason why on the record of what we did wrong on the application, except you didn't do it right. That was their reasoning to me. That was on, it's on record. We can listen to it. We've looked at it. I listened to it. My staff listened to it. And I did miss a thing. I did miss something on there. They could have zoned, hit me for, it was like A through G, I think, the things I had to check into boxes to turn it into pass that quote-unquote to get to qualify for that zoning. We did miss one of them, which I did turn into Jared afterwards because I realized it, and that was the letter he gave to you guys, the piece that I missed. So, and again, the reason why we were frustrated and I asked for this is because the zoning board could not quote me A through G of what we did wrong and if we could rectify it to fix it to move forward with the application.
Yeah, can I ask you a couple things? So, and Jared, you can. So your original application, I'm trying to rebuild this from kind of square one for everyone in the audience as well. Your original application was for conditional use or to rezone the parcels? For
conditional
variance?
Use. Conditional use.
Okay.
Conditional use.
And so just to kind of clarify is, there's something in my field called burden shifting, where the burden's on one party or the other to take affirmative action. So when you say they didn't voice why you didn't meet the criteria?
Correct.
So I guess kind of a statement would be they don't have an obligation to approve you for a variance. That's you asking the Board of Zoning Appeals for something. And they chose to say no. I know that's on record. I reviewed that. So I guess even if you meet the criteria that are the criteria they base it on, they don't have an affirmative duty to say, yes, you can do this. The way our zoning is set up and most zonings are set up, you can ask them for a conditional use, which is essentially you asking for permission to go outside the boundaries of what that was zoned for. But they never have a duty or an obligation to approve it, even if you meet whatever criteria set forth and all that. Like, you still are asking for something. So I would put that out there. A couple questions I had about it, and just there's been a huge growth in the recovery industry in general in the last 15, 20 years. All of the places operate slightly differently. So just to clarify, your residents live there, and they live there only because they are patients of a recovery center somewhere else, or they could be from multiple different recovery centers?
They could go, they have a choice. There's a thing that's called ORH, Ohio Recovery Housing. You have to be certified.
Yep.
We're the only one certified, potentially getting certified in the city of Clyde, by the way. There's none in this area at all. We've looked it up. We thought there was one other one, but there's not. They have options. Just like you have to choose if you want to go to what pharmacy you choose to go to, they can choose to go to different treatment centers. It doesn't have to be ours exactly. I also own Talbot Health Services right up there next to Whirlpool. That's my treatment center. Most of them go there, but they have an option to go other places to see medical services somewhere else or whatever they may be.
So are these people, I'm going to call them your residents or tenants, I don't know how you describe them, are they paying you rent or does the rent get paid by the recovery treatment?
They have to pay rent. That's a requirement of ORH. That's a state requirement.
And they pay the rent or their insurance or something pays the rent to you on an individual basis. It's
correct.
Not paid through any treatment center itself?
No, okay. It's all individual basis. They're required by ORH, which is the law of the state of Ohio, Medicaid. They have to pay their own rent, and they're required to pay rent to stay there.
And you don't administer any treatment at the facility? On
At the house?
At the
on
house.
Buckeye? No treatments there, done there.
Okay.
No. They just live there. They're just a bunch of recovering addicts.
Okay.
I think that's part of the problem, too, that the city – not you guys necessarily, but I think the zoning board had a big grudge against them being recovering addicts.
Okay. Let me ask you this. Are you – who lives at the house besides tenants, residents, whatever.
We have a peer support staff member that lives there to be on site. So we have a staff member there on site 24/7, 7 days a week.
Okay. And the people that are there, do you have any idea of their average length of stay? And I know it's different. I know recovery is takes many
average,
chances for some people.
Anywhere from, I would say, 6 months to, that's average for us, usually 6 months.
Okay.
6 to 8 months, 9 months, depending on how well they do to get jobs. We actually have a couple guys live that work at Whirlpool, so they probably won't be living there long.
Okay.
Which obviously would transition them out because they have to get moved, but.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. They've got jobs here. They pay taxes here. They're local people.
It's a condition of living there. One of the conditions of living there is that you are actively in treatment, and that's under the ORH and everything
as
well.
Yep, correct.
Okay.
They have to be engaged by – they have to dictate what they do, and treatment dictates their stay at their house.
Okay, and then once treatment is considered – and then I know it's a lifetime thing. I understand addiction's ongoing. But once the active treatment is done, they have a set amount of time to relocate, get out.
Transition to their own. The goal is to get them to stabilize them, get them a job, get them stabilized, and then get them their own place and continue on with their sobriety and move forward with their lives.
And how many resident tenants do you have there when it's full? How many can you accommodate?
11.
11 plus your staff for 12 bodies?
Yes, correct.
There? Yes. Okay. I don't have any further questions. I will tell counsel, we have different things we get from the BZA. This one, some of the time to affirm the BZA's decision, you would only require a simple majority, 3 of the 5 of you. Sometimes to overturn the BZA's decision, you need 4 out of 5. This one is just a straight majority. So we are hearing their appeal, not the BZA's appeal. So the action we will ask you to take at some point towards the end of this first meeting would be to either deny the appeal of them or accept their appeal, affirm their appeal, if you will, and go from there. Ultimately, it is your call. The BZA is a board that acts kind of like a fact-finding initial board for you guys to then make the ultimate decision. And I'll answer any questions about order and process to anyone here or in the audience.
Any questions, counsel?
I have some.
Okay. Before I go to counsel,
Mr. Browning has some, yeah.
I have some.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, first, honestly, I just want to acknowledge the work being done that you guys do. I know there's a lot of individuals that struggle. I mean, I'm sure most of us here who have family, you know, friends, family members who went through the same thing, and I want to commend you for, you know, the work that you're doing here. Now, with that being said, I don't think this is necessarily a, you know, discussion on, you know, if we approve of having, you know, recovery houses or if these individuals, you know, need to have, you know, recovery or need our support. But I think it's more of what the, you know, what our zoning is here. And my question to you is, how many of these other operations do you have, like Buckeye House in general, in Ohio?
Total locations?
Yes.
7.
So of those 7 locations, how many of those, like in obviously in different municipalities, I'm assuming too, so how many of those did you actually have to do like this conditional use permit, if at all?
This is my first one.
So those other locations with their zoning and things, they didn't require you to do it?
Correct.
Okay. My questions.
That's it. Mr. McMaster, Mr. Shea, this is an opportunity if anyone, if you have anything you wish to add.
I know that we're not supposed to repeat anything that's already said, so I won't, but I hope the rest of you have, I don't know, read notes or whatever was spoken for in the first meeting. As far as this company, Mr. Dressel's story.
Could you state your name, please?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm Melody. I'm Melody Blevins.
Thank you.
Okay.
228 West Buckeye.
Okay.
I have done some research on their company, and Mr. Dressel's story himself is quite remarkable and his recovery, but it doesn't negate the fact that they moved into the home without notifying anybody or going through the proper channels. But it really does tug at your heartstrings to read where how far he's come. However, it's a business and we're a residential neighborhood. And as far as the topic, this would be new since it was brought up about them paying rent. Insurance and Medicaid does not pay their rent. Medicaid will pay for their recovery. counseling services as well as their insurances. I'd venture to say that most are on Medicaid because if you don't have a job, you might not be insured unless somebody's young enough to still be on their parents' insurance. As far as the rent being paid, that has to be paid. Their first 90 days can be waived because they're not employed, and they would have no way to make a rent payment. If they're on Social Security disability, which many of them or some of them might be due to their dual diagnosis of mental illness, then their Social Security will pay their rent and they won't need to have a job. If they are now a 501c3, which means they will have donations to operate by, which means that there will be donations to give to the men to pay their rent. So as they said in the first meeting, they are not required to have a job, they're required to pay rent. But there's many options for them to pay rent that doesn't require having a job. So that was the first thing. I just wanted to follow up with his answer to that question. As far as their length of stay, there is no minimum and there is no maximum length of stay per their website. So we can have 11 men transitioning in and out of there at their convenience. It's stated on their website that whenever they feel that they have reached their goal for how long they have to stay. So if they're court appointed, their goal will most likely be when the court says that they can leave. Now, I'm not saying that nobody over there has good intentions. They may all have good intentions, and we can only hope that they do. But that's 11 men on a regular basis. And he says an average of 6 months, which he knows more than I do about people's average for recovery. They're only 30 days sober when they come there. So their average stay, if it's 6 months, we're going to have just a regular revolving door there of men that we don't know. We don't know anything about them. The only offenses that they don't accept are sexual predator or sex offenses, sex offenders, and arsonists. There are so many more offenses that they could have had in their past. If they're court appointed or court ordered here, it could be because of some of those offenses. I'm not talking about just simple DUI or disorderly conduct. There's, you know, name it. You can look it up and see what all kinds of offenses there can be. So we don't know these gentlemen that are moving into that house. I truly wish the best for them, but we don't know them. We don't know their families, their friends. Generally, people don't break ties with their circle. And not that everybody's circle is a bad circle if they have an addiction problem, but they're allowed to have visitors, which is understandable. It's not a jail. Their visitors are supposed to sign in and out. However, from being right there front and center with the house, they're
I'm going to interrupt you because what I don't want to get into is any type of character judgments or anything of this, okay?
Okay.
We're here to hear of the legalities of the appeal.
The what?
Okay, the appeal, okay, is what we're here to hear, is the appeal from the Buckeye Home as to why the DZA denied their conditional use, okay?
So, right. I guess I'm confused. Why would any of us that oppose it be invited to the mic if you're here just
true, but I want to sort of expedite it. All
okay.
Right, so.
I know, and you said that this decision would be made right here and now. Today it sounded like.
But what I'm hearing is more of a sort of a character judgment of the residents.
No,
here,
that's not what I'm.
I'm
factual from what they said. I'm not going to argue. I'm sorry, but I'm stating facts from what they spoke of and what I've gotten off of the website. I'm stating facts. Their visitor policy, and I'll just end after this. But their visitor policy, they're supposed to sign in and sign out of their home. It's in their policies. But they have visitors that drive up and just sit in the car and chit chat and then leave. I mean, it seems a little. I'm really not sure what else I'm allowed to share then if I can't state the facts of what I observe and what I see.
Just to clarify, so, you know, we're here for an appeal. So I understand the BZA meeting went on north of 2 hours, and people, your commentary at that point is essentially unlimited. Okay. I will tell you that everyone here had access to the minutes from that meeting. They could go listen to the audio of that meeting. We've all been made aware through different processes, things that were said. So everyone sat down tonight fully aware of all of the neighborhood concerns, unless there were new concerns that came up since the BZA meeting, which is why we do allow you guys to clarify. That's why Mr. Dressel had to – he added a letter since then, and that's what he informed us of, saying, hey, basically, we know what happened at the BZA meeting, but here's some new information, and that's it. So we just want to stick to the new information. We do understand the neighborhood concerns. We understand the business. You know, I'll echo what everyone says. I work – I've prosecuted. I've worked in defense. I work as an attorney locally. The addiction crisis has been at the forefront of our criminal justice system since my career started in 2012. It got worse. It's starting to get better, thankfully. But I completely understand the concerns. I would want to emphasize that our zoning rules are not to pick kind of what we can have and not have in the city. They are to pick where those things are located, and that's my clarification. I have a political science background. There's the NIMBYs is the argument, not in my backyard, okay? The old argument is we all need a landfill, but no one wants to live next to it, okay? I'm not comparing your organization to a landfill, but there are certain things that people are more sensitive to living next door. So cars in and out could happen to anybody. I have a neighbor where I live who plays music too loud. That's an issue for me. But it's not necessarily a zoning violation. So we just want to stick to the zoning violation, as it were, which is, in my mind, that a business is running a recovery facility in a place that's zoned residential only. So it's not that we're trying to cut you off or undermine your argument. We get all of your concerns. I fully understand every concern you guys have made. It's just that we're sticking to kind of a narrow focus. It's not – it doesn't matter whether we like or hate recovery houses. It doesn't matter – it matters – whether this recovery house is located in a spot it's properly zoned for, and whether we want to allow a conditional use to allow them to operate in a spot it's not traditionally zoned for. That's our narrow focus.
Okay. And so in that regard, then, all I would say is what we already know, that they moved in without the proper zoning approval, and I have a hard time thinking that when they own seven other homes that they that it was an oversight. You have to get a specific mortgage to purchase a home for a business as a different interest rate, different down payment, et cetera. So it feels like it was a huge oversight on the part of the lender and everybody, or something else out there is not quite right. So I won't say any more. I do have a letter from the neighbor next to them. I don't know who would like to have this. I'd rather not be the one to read it. It's I don't know.
I'll take it, and then it'll go in our minutes with
sure.
Janet. And just in the interest of not making copies, and one of us out there, with your permission, Mayor, I'll read this quickly.
Sure.
June 2nd, 2026, to Clyde City Council, on Thursday, May 28th, there was a loud party/cookout going on at 235 West Buckeye. Started around 3 p.m. and went on until 6:30 or 7 p.m. There were 12 or 13 people gathered. They played their music loudly with no respect for me and my family who were in our backyard. I did not ask them to turn music down. There were at least four women who went into and out of the house. I have never heard of a drug rehab facility having a party such as this. And her name is in cursive. I'm going to pronounce it. I apologize. LaDonna Heidi?
LaDonna. I don't know her last name.
I'm sorry? LaDonna Hicks. Okay, sorry. She wrote that in cursive. I couldn't make it out. That'll go into our minutes with Janice.
I guess I have nothing further. I do have their policies and documents, and the medication policy is interesting. I don't know if you guys even want this, but it's a copy for the city council.
But I have no intent to disrespect your time. We have a process and a procedure to go through and stick to the legality of it.
Okay.
I value your opinion. Council, would there be any questions? Mrs. Meek?
I don't believe so. I just want to make sure, was that a yes of saying we confirm the zoning decision?
No. So we're actually hearing their appeal.
Okay.
So a yes would be that they win their appeal. No would be we're denying their appeal.
Okay.
It's kind of flipped on its head, but that's because they're actually the ones that are here and initiated this meeting to contest the BZA. So we're not affirming BZA.
Okay.
We are in a sense, but what we're actually deciding yes or no on is their appeal.
Okay.
A no would be bad for them, and a yes would be good for them, just to clarify.
This depends on how you put it into a motion. Mr. Browning, anything else?
No questions.
Mr. McMaster?
Yeah, I feel it goes outside of the R1A residential
in two different ways. One, that's only single family. Duplexes with a conditional use, and condominiums. So it's definitely not single family living. And two, you are providing a service, so that qualifies it as a business. So I believe it does technically go outside of the zoning for that area. And then it's from there that we need to listen to the people, to the BZA, that they decided they didn't want to issue the conditional use. So then we have to make the decision whether we want to override what our board told us.
That's Mr. Shea.
I have nothing to add.
Okay. So council will make a motion to either affirm or deny.
I'd like to make a motion to deny the appeal.
There's a motion to deny the appeal. May I have a second?
I would second that.
And second by Mr. McMaster. Okay, roll call.
Mayor McCauley?
Aye.
Councilman McMaster?
Aye.
Vice Mayor Shea?
Aye.
Councilwoman Meek?
Aye.
Councilman Browning?
Aye.
The appeal is denied. Okay. We are now adjourned.